Late Life Lucky, Anticipating the Ideal Outcome. It is episode 14, season 2020, Leaning Toward Wisdom. Welcome inside the Ellis Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I am your host, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Today is Tuesday, December the 1st, 2020. It's unbelievable to me. Season 2020, episode 14. Yeah, you know what this means. I've only recorded 14 episodes this year. Wait a minute, what? Robert H. Frank, he is the Henrietta Johnson Lewis. Yeah, say that quick, 14 times. He is the Henrietta Johnson Lewis Professor of Management and Professor of Economics at Cornell's Johnson Graduate School of Management. That is one long title. Bob must be bright, right? I'm betting he doesn't go by Bob. I'm betting he goes by Robert. I don't know him personally, and frankly, until 2016, I didn't have any idea who this guy was. But in 2016, there was an article that appeared online in The Atlantic that was entitled, Why Luck Matters More Than You Think. And it was intriguing to me. Because honestly, well, there wasn't anything new about my intrigue, but the subject of luck has fascinated me for a long, long time. You know, some people don't believe in luck or serendipity or chance, especially when it comes to success or achievement. And I find that that's especially true with people who have achieved something. You know, they don't really want to be too quick to admit luck. And yet, there are some other people that are very humble and very self-deprecating who readily admit, man, right place, right time. And if it had not just kind of lined up a certain way, there is no way I would be where I'm at today. By late life, when I say late life lucky, I don't necessarily mean age, but it might include that. Most certainly it includes experience. But, you know, age and experience are not the same thing. A person begins to learn something at an early age. I'm thinking of, take a current professional ice hockey player. His parents put him in skates for the first time when he was 3. And since then, he has spent almost as much time in ice skates as he has sneakers. And so by the time he's approaching 14, he's now more than a decade into the learning curve. And so off he goes to play what's called major junior hockey. It's a high level of play for boys that are approaching high school. And he moves to another town where the team is located, and he begins to play the highest level of amateur hockey while he lives with this host family who has taken him in. Before his 18th birthday, he is drafted by an NHL team. He's 15 years into the learning process, but he's only 18 years old. So he doesn't have age, but he's got years of experience. A person matures past middle age. She has spent her entire life pursuing art. As a young girl, she fell in love with painting, and she's been at it ever since. It's never earned her much of a living until now. And a while back, she had this little showing at a local gallery, and randomly, a blogger with a widely read blog happened to live in the area where the gallery was and visited the exhibition. And wrote a piece about this woman's artwork, along with posting some photographs of her work. about 100 miles away in a big city, an art gallery owner saw the blog post about this now older woman and her art showing, and an email is sent. And now, after 4 decades of painting and creating artwork in relative obscurity, she is achieving late life luck. She is experienced at art and at life. She has both age and experience, unlike the 18-year-old hockey player. You know, there are many, many, many flip side stories that counterbalance these stories. There are stories of people who began very early, never did find any success to speak of. People who have persisted for decades, never found any luck. Things never did quite work out. I wish I could tell you why. I wish I could come to you today and just say, well, here, I got it all figured out. I don't have it figured out. I've just got questions, as you well know. Hey, welcome inside the Ella Studio. Is it upbeat enough for you yet? As we begin December, this whole late life lucky thing, anticipating the ideal outcome, these are really two thoughts that I've had most of this year. And while I would love to tell you, well, I don't know why I would love to tell you, but I guess maybe I would, to tell you that the pandemic had something to do with it. I really don't think so. I don't think the pandemic had one thing to do with it. I do think that my age has something to do with it, just the fact that I'm growing older. But I've been really fixated for a long, 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 long time. In fact, I was having a conversation just last week with a business fella, and we were just kind of going back through our careers. And, you know, it dawns on me, I don't ever remember a time of not anticipating the ideal outcome. I don't ever remember a time of taking a job, going to work, and not looking at something and thinking, man, I bet we could do this better. I mean, I bet we could find a way to improve this. You know, why do we do it this way? Kind of a thing. I've always been geared toward and bent toward, for lack of a better word, efficiency, effectiveness, improvement. And it wasn't because I was fancy. It wasn't because I was all that knowledgeable. It certainly wasn't because I was wise. I think it was mostly because I was bored, and mostly because I just looked at something and thought, you know, that can't be the best way to do this. There's got to be a better way. I kid and jokingly say, although there's great truth to it, that probably a lot of it was just motivated by just sheer laziness. It's like, if we're doing it this way, that seems way harder. And yet, it really wasn't laziness, because the ideal outcome in my head was always, well, it was something much better than what the status quo was. It was better. It was an improvement. It was growth. Yeah, I very quickly, as a young person, as a teenager, going to a job, realized I'm going to be here from this hour to this hour. I'm going to be putting in certain amount of hours every week. Why not win at the end of it, right? I mean, what's the point? And I remember very early on, I mentioned this just today on my podcast over at growgreat.com. I got to thinking about this very topic and realized that I had a football coach when I was just a kid, and I remember him telling us, you know, there's 4 quarters in a game, you know, 15-minute quarters, so that's 60 minutes of play. And at the end of the game, our team is either going to be celebrating, and you guys are going to be riding the bus home, and y'all are going to be singing, and y'all are going to be cutting up and having a big time, or it's going to be deathly quiet because you'll have lost. And you'll be down, and you'll be replaying all these mistakes that you made and all these things that you wish you would have done differently during the game. And what's the difference? Both teams prepared, Both teams practiced. Both teams played a 60-minute game. And yet for one of you, it ends with just great joy, and with the other, it ends with just horrific pain and sorrow. And that's right. That's right. So maybe it's because of that kind of a coach speech that I got as a kid that resonated with me and made me think, okay, when you apply that to any area of our life, our work, our professional life, our personal life, the same could be said. We are making these investments, these daily investments of our time. And yes, you know the adage already. We've all got the same number of hours. It's just where we choose to put them. I know you don't have enough time for it. I don't either. But you know what? Yeah, we do. We just don't make the time for the stuff that we may claim is important to us, but we prove by our actions it's really, you know what? It really ain't that important. Because if it was, I would do it. So I don't do it. The ideal outcome is achieved not by people who have more time, right? I mean, that the team that won the game, they still played 60 minutes just like the losers did. So you can't blame not reaching the ideal outcome on not having enough time. Who was that famous coach that said, we've never lost a game. We have run out of time before. Well, it's humorous, but it's not true. Anticipating the ideal outcome, and maybe more importantly, although I think it begins there with anticipation of the ideal outcome, but achieving the ideal outcome requires no more time than anticipating or achieving a lesser outcome or even a poor outcome. The time that it takes to succeed, I don't believe, is any greater than the time it takes to fail. Now, I know a lot of folks can argue that and say, well, you know, but people put in the time and they prepare and they practice and, I mean, pick anything, right? That whole 10,000-hour baloney. Well, I get all that. But when it comes to you getting up in the morning, if you get up at 6 and you go to bed at 10, you've got those waking hours. What you do with those waking hours is completely up to you. And at the end of those waking hours, it's the same number of hours whether you win or lose. So you might as well aim for winning, right? That's the anticipation of the ideal outcome. I'm really vexed by this whole good enough thing. It has bothered me since I was just a kid. You know, to look at something and go, it's not really good. It could be better, but it's good enough. We don't want to spend more time on it. Versus looking back and stepping back with some perspective and thinking, you know, I'm pretty proud of that. I mean, look at what we did. Look at what I did. I achieved, maybe it wasn't the ideal outcome, but maybe it was close. And then maybe we're challenged to consider, okay, we'd have done this a little bit different, maybe that a little bit better. Man, that would have been pretty ideal. And maybe we work toward that the next go around. So if you take that notion and now couple with it this whole late life lucky thing, and again, by late life, I don't mean it could be an 18-year-old who's 15 years into playing hockey, or it could be somebody who's way older, who's got 4 decades in doing a craft, and then suddenly, perchance, success happens. And in this case, we're calling it success because she's selling more paintings. She's achieving some financial success with this thing, this craft, this art that she's been doing for a long, long time without hardly any success. I'm fascinated by both of these things. And so today for episode 14, I just wanted to riff a little bit about the marriage of these two ideas. And the first one, the late life lucky part of the equation, what can we do about this? Well, you know, one thing that we tend to be, well, just subjected to, I think, is the early start or not having the early start. I began to sell stereo equipment when I was 15 or 16. Now, by the time I'm 25, I'm leading a company. I'm not very old, but I'm a decade in now. I mean, I got 10 years experience in this thing now. Well, that's a long time. Did I get lucky in the beginning? Not really, because I was interested. And all I did is just kind of chase what I loved. I loved listening to records. I loved music. And I loved the equipment, the stereo gear that would play records really, really well. I got real fascinated by it. Now, I wasn't all that technically inclined, but I was technically enough inclined to know the difference between good systems and bad systems, and I understood what made a good system, what didn't make a good system, and where you could spend your money and get more bang for the buck. I had figured those things out, and I figured those things out within the first few years. Well, it made all the difference in the world, starting early. It did make a difference in being what you could say late life lucky. I then got some career opportunities because of my experience and having started so young that I wouldn't have otherwise had. Well, I know that that doesn't happen for everybody. I mean, just like the young man who's a hockey player, not every parent puts their three-year-old in ice skates. I live here in North Central Texas. And in spite of the fact that we have a professional hockey team, the Dallas Stars, and in spite of the fact that we have some minor league hockey teams, and in spite of the fact that we have a ton of youth hockey being played, it probably isn't going to be standard fare for a Texas couple to put their three-year-old in ice skates unless dad played hockey, unless mom played hockey, right? It's probably going to be way more likely for especially a young boy to have dad throw him a football, right? I mean, this is a football state. I mean, Friday Night Lights and all that. So you've got some kids who, by the time they get to high school, well, they've had a football in their hand as long as they can remember. And it was prompted because of mom and dad. And that's the case for a lot of folks. Now, my situation with the music and stereo equipment, all that, had not one thing to do with my parents. But again, I didn't start when I was three either. I was 15 or 16. And I had gotten into music just probably right about the time I was turned into a teenager. So I don't know that late life lucky part. Getting an early start part, it just, I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. I look at people that are high achievers in various things, and if you read their biography and if you dig deep enough and you realize that many of these people, their start not only was early, but in many cases they had parents, they had grandparents that really were an impetus for them. I know families, for instance, that education, big, big deal, right? Big, big deal. And I'm really fascinated by these people that, I mean, man, they go and they get through college and they get advanced degrees and they get their PhD and, you know, they find themselves on the faculty at Harvard or some prestigious university. And I'm fascinated by these people because these are not people that they have not lived a life like I've lived. Right. I mean, there's a huge part of me that cannot relate. And there's a huge part of me that is, frankly, rather envious. Now, my family valued education. Yeah, but not like these people. Not like these people did. And it doesn't make them better. It doesn't make me better. It's just different. And that whole nurture, nature kind of a thing enters into the equation when we start thinking about who we grew up around, who influenced us growing up, and the impact that that has on us. I find myself pretty regularly telling people, you know, at some point, and I don't know why I pick this age, but I always do. I will always say 11 years old. We basically are the 11-year-old version of ourselves. I'm sure I read that somewhere. I picked that. I didn't just pick that out of random air. I came across that somewhere in my background, and it has stuck. And I will always say, when we're talking about struggles or challenges or squabbles between fathers and sons and all kinds of situations, I do believe it. I do believe that deep down, we fundamentally are still dealing with the 11-year-old version of ourselves. I don't have any empirical evidence of that. It just seems so true. I think back to those things that I was feeling as an 11-year-old or so. And you know what? I mean, it's not so different. Is that true for you? I mean, can you think back to the 11-year-old version of you? And this is really hard. As you get older, it gets really, really hard to remember life at a specific moment in time because, right, it's just all this hodgepodge of memories and history. But when I think about late life Lucky and I think about the circumstances of how we were raised, I can tell you that personally, I'm just absolutely filled with gratitude. I mean, that's the elephant in the room for me. I mean, because my life could have turned out so differently if I had not had the grandparents that I had, particularly a maternal grandmother that I had, who was a tremendously big influence on me as a kid growing up. And you think of things like that, and I think of me not as an 11-year-old, but I think of me as a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, and the influence and the impact that, at least in my mind then, these old people had on me. And for good, all for good. And the fact that I was not surrounded by a bunch of people with pom-poms who just cheered me on in whatever foolishness I chose to engage in, but people who were absolutely positively willing to call me on the carpet and not let me get by with things. I jokingly tell kids today that, you know, I grew up listening, hearing old men, and I don't know. I was always fascinated at just kind of sitting around or standing around, you know, at the kneecaps of these old men and just listening to the conversation. I was always that kid who was kind of loitering to see what the adults were up to. And it was not so much nosiness as it was just pure curiosity. But I grew up hearing old men, you know, I mean, it's... the minute you heard that, you knew, I better tighten up. I'm getting out of line here. I mean, I'm getting too loud. I'm too rambunctious. I mean, I'm too something. I need to check myself and look around and figure out what I'm doing. Cause the minute an old man starts saying, yeah, you know, you know, stop it. I mean, that's an old man attention getter. And it's funny, I catch myself doing that quite intentionally today just to kind of shock some of the little kids that are in my life. It's kind of fun. We need old men in our lives. We need old women in our lives. So my late life Lucky really wasn't so late. It really began early because I was very lucky. I was very fortunate to have old people in my life that would do that for me. Now, you don't think of it at the time. You don't quite think of it as being of great service to me, you know, having some old man call me on the carpet, you know, and tell me to behave. And I've done that all my life. You can ask some of the kids that I've coached through the years, you know, the one thing that they've always mocked me about is, you know, me telling them, you guys behave. Y'all behave. It becomes kind of a point of imitation where they imitate me preaching to them about behaving. I grew up hearing that. You know, did you? I mean, what did you grow up hearing? What are your memories of the older people in your life? And how lucky do you feel? Or do you feel lucky? Maybe you didn't have the fortune that I had. Maybe you grew up and things were very, very different for you. Maybe you grew up and I'm so sad by it. And I'm sorry for you if your experience was dramatically different from mine and that you grew up with abusive. And I've certainly talked with enough adult people, even people my age, older people today who, you know, their memories are filled with an alcoholic father, with parents who had an abusive relationship with one another and as well with the kids. And I just think, and I'm just so blessed, that's not my experience. It is not my experience. Can we overcome that? Well, most assuredly we can. I got news for you. I'm freely confessing my weakness to tell you that had I been in a situation like that, I don't know that I'm good enough. I don't know that I'm strong enough to have overcome that. I really don't. And so I feel very fortunate that I was blessed to not have that kind of adversity, because I don't know that I could have handled it well or survived it. I just don't know that I'm that strong. So I look at people who have overcome such things with great admiration. I mean, these stories of people who have overcome great odds, I mean, don't these stories fascinate all of us? And as fascinating as they are, I'm so thankful that that's not my story. I'm sad that it's their story, and I'm elated that it ended for them so well, but it makes me wonder, how many are out there, though? And this is not the end of, that's not the ending that they've got. You know, this was an ideal outcome for you, but for countless others who grew up with alcoholic parents and now they themselves find that they've become their parents, and they too are now hopelessly attached and troubled. It's a sad thing. Hey, but this is not about pessimism. This is really about optimism. This is about late life lucky, and it is about our anticipating the ideal outcome. This is about our commitment as we enter a new month, December, the last month of the year, and we face a new year, and we don't have a clue what we're facing. We never do, but we really don't now. We hear rumblings of a vaccine, and of course that's going to bring with it all kinds of drama, especially amongst those that are anti-vaccine people. And we've had, you know, an election that it may not have gone the way you want. It may have gone exactly the way you wanted. I just know this. I know this, that every day that you get up, every day that I get up, we are in charge of our life. And I don't personally care who's in the White House, to the extent that I'm not going to surrender my life to whoever's in the White House. I respect the office. And the person elected to the office, I'm going to give due respect because it's the right thing to do. Well, and because the Bible tells me to. I'm a Christian, so there's that. But to think that that has some huge, overriding, overarching impact on my daily life, I don't think so. In fact, I'll go you one better. I just refuse to let that be the case. I just don't get fixated on it. Doesn't mean that I don't care. I love the country. I want what's best for the country, but I don't particularly know what's best for the country. So I just move forward every day. I just do what I feel like I need to do. But I do have an ideal outcome in mind. Do you? I want you to. I mean, not that it makes any hill of beans difference to me, but I want that for you. I don't want you to settle. I don't want you to feel like you're stuck. I don't want you to feel like, well, listen, this is as good as it's going to get. And I don't want us to go through life with just kind of this meh attitude. I don't want us to go through life with this, it's good enough. I get, from a practical standpoint, that sometimes it is good enough. I completely understand that. But surely we can do better than anticipate mediocrity, than to anticipate average. I mean, come on, it's average for a reason, because that's where most people are, average. And I completely understand that we can't all be above average. I completely understand that we can't all be world class. But I've got a question. If you don't try, how are you going to know? How are you going to know that you can't be above average? How are you going to know that you can't be in the top tier? How are you going to know that you can't be world class if you don't try? Sure fire way that you won't be that if you don't try. So I understand that there's no guarantees. I understand that I may try and I may try and I may try, that I may paint for 40 years and I may paint for 40 years in obscurity and anonymity, and then I may get a break. Or I may not. But maybe the bigger point here is she painted for 40 years plus. Why was she doing it? Well, she wasn't doing it for the financial success. If she was doing it for the financial success, she's an idiot. Because she wasn't achieving financial success. It wasn't working. That's not why she did it. She did it because she loved it. She did it because she had in her some belief that her work was worthwhile. Maybe not on some grand world stage, but locally, a few people, a few houses that had some of her paintings hanging, a few people who expressed that her artwork made a difference in their lives. She wasn't worried about scaling. She wasn't worried about becoming financially independent. She just wanted to paint, and so she painted. I'm a hockey player. Wants to play hockey, happens to be good enough to play it at the highest level, wants to keep pressing that, wants to break into the NHL if he can make it. The minor leagues in every major sport are filled with people who have the dream to get to the big leagues. They want to get to the big stage. And we can look at them and we can scoff and say, oh, come on. You just need to face the music that you're not good enough. But here's the rub. They're anticipating the ideal outcome. Nobody goes into a professional sport thinking, you know, I'm going to languish in the minor leagues for about 10 years. I'm not going to make any money at all. And then I'm going to get a late start on some career where I'm going to be so far behind the eight ball, I'll never make it up. And that's what I'm anticipating. Says nobody. Nobody does that. No. The anticipation is I can get to the major leagues of whatever it is. In hockey, I can get to the NHL. In baseball, I can get to the Major League Baseball League. I can get to the NBA in basketball. That's the anticipation. We catch them and we see them riding buses playing minor league stuff, even if we know that they exist, and we usually don't until they make it to the big leagues, and then the stories are told about how they rode the bus for however many years, and we hear those stories. But while they're on the bus, you know what they're doing? They're figuring it out. They're figuring out if they can achieve their ideal outcome. And how are you going to know if you don't try? So they're trying. And we're going to throw rocks at them for trying? Sure, because it's what we do. Okay, well, stop it. Let's not do that. And let's not let people throw rocks at us. Well, they can. They're going to, and you can't stop them. But you can turn a blind eye to it because you're just trying to figure it out. And I don't care if you're 18. I don't care if you're 80. My dad's 97. My dad has got some goals and dreams and ambitions. They're different from mine. He knows logically that the runway is really short. So he knows that whatever is on his mind and whatever his dreams may be, he best get busy with it because time is running out. He knows this. He's not a stupid man. He understands this hourglass of time that he is staring at and how the sand is quickly leaving the top bulb and flowing into the bottom. Well, I'm his son, and I'm a lot younger, but if he's in the winter of his life, I'm certainly in the fall of mine, and winter's coming on fast. but none of us know. So the late life part of all this, you don't know. I was reading today, there was some Instagram influencer down in Houston, 26 years old, and not some big rock star influencer. She had like 20,000 Instagram followers and 50,000 TikTok followers. So she was no big deal, right? In the grand scheme of things. I mean, she's not a person with millions and millions of followers. But the phone and social media, say her friends, that was her life. I'm not judging the poor girl because she's gone now. They found her body. But I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I mean, what a sad thing. What a sad thing. 26 and it's over. The sand has already run through the hourglass for her. And here's my dad, 97, still going strong. So it goes, right? And the lesson is, we've got now. We've got right now. I need to pull this up and find it and read this to you because it came up in my, social media for me, I'm in and out. I mean, I'm like a seagull, you know, I just come in and do my thing and then I leave. But 5 years ago on November the 30th, 2015, I posted a thing. It was a quote by the actor Hugh Laurie. Hugh Laurie is the guy who played Dr. House. You remember that show House? And here's the quote. And I found this quote to be significant and true 5 years ago, and it's more true today. Here's the quote. It's a terrible thing, I think, in life to wait until you're ready. I have this feeling now that actually no one is ever ready to do anything. There's almost no such thing as ready. There's only now. And you may as well do it now. Generally speaking, now is as good a time as any. And isn't that right? I think so. I really do. I think so. And so this notion of late life lucky and anticipating the ideal outcome, here's the bottom line. And here's the takeaway as we kind of wind this thing down. I don't know if serendipity will come your way. I don't know if you'll get discovered. I don't know if you'll make it to the big leagues, but you might as well give it a go. You might as well try. Whatever that is, whatever that looks like. And it's especially easier if the pursuit is something that A, you're really good at, B, you love it. I'm a real big believer in Sir Ken Robinson. And I was absolutely, two deaths really impacted me this year. Sir Ken's and John Prine. And both of those deaths really laid me low this year. But Sir Ken, who maintained that intersection where the thing that you really love intersects with where you're really good, where you really have natural aptitude, where that intersects, he called the element. And we've used that phraseology in our everyday language. You know, hey, he's in his element. Or I'm in my element. Man, when I'm doing this, I'm in my element. And what we mean by that is we're doing something that we love and we're doing something that we're pretty good at. We'll find that. Find that intersection. And man alive, how much better would it be if we all leaned into that instead of trying to be something that we're not really good at? We're never really going to be very good at it. It's just not really something that we're all that interested in, but maybe we feel like we should be. And so we try to force ourselves into being a square peg into a round hole. That doesn't work. Yeah, that's late life lucky. As far as anticipating the ideal outcome, I've got some personal goals. I've got some professional goals. I'm gonna tell you the truth. Well, I'm always going to tell you the truth. My professional goals are fueled by my personal goals. They just are. Now, I love what I do. I love serving clients. But I've got some personal ambitions that are really tethered to my professional pursuits. And I bet you do too. And in the ideal outcome that I'm seeking for my wife and I, Lord willing, on January the 2nd, we will have been married 43 years. And we're now at this stage of life as 63-year-old people. Yeah, we're thinking, okay, in a year or two, where are we going to be? What are we going to do? What do we want this stage of our life to look like? Well, number one, we're working, folks, so we know we want to work. I mean, and I love my work, so I'm going to keep working. It's not that. It's just, okay, you know, now what? And many of these goals are not only practical and reasonable, but they're, you know, they're just kind of, well, for instance, it's very common for people our age to downsize, right? You see it all the time. Well, there's a good reason for it. I'm in a house where the kids were when, you know, they grew up, they were in high school and college in this house where I'm at. And we've got two bedrooms and the doors stay closed and the air vents stay closed. And we got a dining room that you just walk through to get to another room. You got a den that you never occupy. You just walk through it. I mean, we've got easily more than half the house that we never live in. I mean, not only do we never live in it, except for having to pass through one room in order to get to another room, we wouldn't even go through the room. And you get to be this age and you find that this is how life operates, right? It's this new phase of life. Okay, well, what's the ideal outcome? Well, we're in the midst of figuring that out. I'm not going to tell you because I don't have the answer for that. I just know that we can sit here and we could pursue any number of outcomes. And so I'm constantly kind of pushing and challenging. Let's anticipate the ideal outcome. Because, well, for one, it's fun and it's kind of cool, right? I mean, who wants to, well, let's just, I don't know, what can we, let's just settle for something. Well, that doesn't get me out of bed in the morning. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. You know, I what's our ideal outcome? What would absolutely just set us on fire with enthusiasm? And so those are the things that we're thinking about. And those are the things that I want to cheerlead you today to think about. I don't know what the ideal outcome is for you. And it's irrelevant what I think. And so let me end with, I don't know, just a word or two about self-awareness. Late life lucky, anticipating the ideal outcome, is really predicated on an accurate awareness of ourselves. This has really come home to me in the last number of years, especially since I hit the age 60, because you see so many people, so many fellas that I talk to who, oh man, when I retire, I want to do this and I want to do that. And it's just looking, anticipating retiring. And they're thinking about what they would like to do. And I'm fully convinced that many of them think that this would be the ideal outcome. But you can find fellas that will mention all kinds of pursuits. And my natural inclination is always to ask about what that pursuit has looked like up to this point. For instance, man, when I retire, I am going to fish. And I'm, oh, well, tell me about your fishing experience up to this point. Oh, well, I don't. Oh, you don't? No. I mean, I fished a little bit, but not a bunch. But man, when I retire, I'm going to, and you know, I'm just set. I sit there and this is what I immediately think about. I think about me and the guitar, and I've told you about this before. It'd be like me saying, you know, man, one of these days I'm really going to master the guitar. I've owned guitars for 50 years. I've got one 10 feet from me in a case. I never take it out. I never strum it. I never hold it. I don't do anything with it. You know what I love? Here's my self-awareness. I'm in love with the idea of being able to play the guitar really well. What I'm not in love with, I'm really not in love with what it takes to get there. And that's completely different. Completely different. Here's who I really am. I love listening to really good guitar players. There's the truth. That's my reality. That's my self-awareness. I like having the guitar. Don't get me wrong. It's kind of a muse for me, but nothing more. But what I really like, hey, when any new Billy Strings record comes out, I'm in. You know, that big new Wildflowers album by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. You know, it's got 55 tracks. I mean, it was $30. I bought it, right? I mean, it's, come on. Mike Campbell, I mean, this is a guitar band. The Heartbreakers were and are a guitar band, and I'm in. Well, that's what I love. That's my ideal outcome. Not picking up a guitar, not learning to play the guitar, not messing around. You know, I would rather put my focus and appreciate the talents of a Mike Campbell, the talents of a Billy Strings. So what is that for you? What's the ideal outcome for you? Really, truly. Not what you think other people may want it to be, or not what you may fascinate yourself to, but what, where really are you? Now, I do think it's somewhat different depending on our age. I'm at an age, if I was 23, I might would feel different. But at the same time, I got to tell you, when I was 23, I was as into the guitar as I am now. And I still wasn't picking it up and playing it. So not much has changed over 40 years, 50 years. It just hasn't. Because, well, like I said before, we're all the 11-year-old version of ourselves. Okay, 11-year-old, well, okay, 13-year-old me. Yeah, I liked guitar. I liked guitar. Was I in love with maybe being able to play? Sure, who wouldn't be? But I was not in love with the price tag that came attached to achieve that ideal outcome. And I didn't settle. I just realized, you know what my ideal outcome is? Being able to listen to these guys and these gals that can play like crazy. It's great. I love it. And I like the sound systems that can play it really well. Or in today's world, the headphones that can replicate it and reproduce it really well. Listen, I don't know what any of this looks like for you. And that's for you to decide. That's the great thing about all this. This is really about us helping one another. Leaning Toward Wisdom is Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. It is nothing more than you and me coming together, sharing some thoughts and ideas, trying to provoke one another. Because, well, it's the impact that we can have on one another. I hope as you're approaching the end of this year, and as you no doubt make plans for next year, I hope that you will fully embrace anticipating the ideal outcome. And if that means being world class, it means being world class. Why not? Speaking of guitar, and a little bit of snare, and a bass guitar. Hey, I'm glad that you're here. I would apologize that it's only 14 episodes this year, but I'm without excuse. I did not anticipate the ideal outcome when it came to podcast production here at Leaning Toward Wisdom. But I'm glad you're here. I'm glad that you've stuck around in spite of my sporadic production. I haven't been nearly as diligent as the mature past middle age artist who devoted herself to daily painting. And it's not because I don't love it. It's just, sadly, life gets in the way. And I'm like you. I let life get in the way. And that's on me. Randy Cantrell is my name. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. All kinds of ways that you can subscribe to the podcast. And if you go to the website and you click on that Facebook icon, if you're a Facebook person, I know. I'm not either that much. But there is a private Facebook group, and you're welcome to join. All you got to do is click on that icon. There's a couple of questions you got to answer. They're super easy. Trust me. I'll let you in, and I'll let you stay there as long as you behave yourself. So there you go. Late Life Lucky, Anticipating the Ideal Outcome, Episode 14, Season 2020. Randy Cantrell's my name. Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas is home. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.
Mm-hmm.